demonstrations to condemn the Wednesday terrorist attack on a shrine. France is grappling with its highest inflation in nearly four decades, with people feeling the pinch of soaring food and energy prices. And South Korea says North Korea has fired two ballistic missiles into the Korean Peninsula waters 4 days after the two exchanged warning shots. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Iranians have held nationwide rallies to condemn the Wednesday terrorist attack in the southern city of Shiraz. The protesters took to the streets in different cities following Friday prayers. They chanted slogans and held banners calling for the perpetrators to be brought to justice. At least 15 people, including two children, were killed after a gunman opened fire at pilgrims at the Shah Cheragh Holy Shrine in Shiraz. 26 others were also wounded. The Daesh terror group claimed responsibility. Iranian authorities have promised a firm response to the terror attack, saying that the perpetrators and their backers will be punished. Staying with Iran, the country's Revolution Guards Corps says that it has thwarted a terror attack in the city of Shiraz, where Daesh claimed the Wednesday deadly shooting. The IRGC says its intelligence unit detected and foiled a bombing which was planned to target congested streets in the southern city. The governor of Shiraz also says a terrorist who is now in police custody was seeking to explode a bomb in the crowded street on Thursday night. The city, located in Fars province, is mourning the death of 15 people killed in the shooting. And France is grappling with its highest inflation in nearly four decades, with people feeling the pinch of soaring food and energy prices. Consumer price index climbed by 6.2% in October on a year-on-year basis. That is according to a preliminary data published by France's Statistics Authority. Food prices have seen the highest increase, standing at around 12%. That means people making ends meet are affected mostly. Energy prices have skyrocketed as well, prompting measures by the government to help low-income households. Meanwhile, the Eurozone economy is reeling from inflation. The European Central Bank has announced another increase in interest rates to curb soaring prices, but there are fears that the tightening monetary policy would lead to a recession. North Korea has fired two ballistic missiles off its east coast in the latest in a series of launches in recent weeks. South Korea's military says the missiles were short range. It says that it has stepped up monitoring and security while coordinating with the U.S. The latest launch comes 4 days after Seoul and Pyongyang exchanged warning shots off the west coast. It also comes as South Korea is set to finish a 12-day military drill that includes exercises with the U.S. North Korea is strongly opposed to the joint drill, saying that they are a rehearsal for an invasion. Pyongyang says missile launches are a protest against the drills, while tensions are simmering on the Korean Peninsula. The U.S. and the South say the North is preparing to conduct a new nuclear test, the seventh since 2017. South Korean civil leaders demand an end to joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises. Two countries have engaged in the largest military drills in 5 years, with more exercises to continue in November. The drills come amid a rise in tensions following North Korea's recent missile test. Frank Smith reports.
South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has been under pressure for his hardline policy against North Korea, as tensions increase amid renewed large-scale military exercises with the U.S. This week, he sought to reassure the National Assembly and the public.
We will strengthen deterrence against North Korea with overwhelming capabilities through combined defense posture between South Korea and the U.S. and the trilateral security cooperation between South Korea, the U.S. and Japan, so that our people can continue their daily lives without worry.
Progressive civil society worries the Korean Peninsula has fallen into crisis, with unification becoming more and more remote. They oppose the military exercises, demanding an end to the drills and a rethinking of South Korea's alliance with the United States. The U.S.-South Korea drills have continued since the end of August, following North Korea's testing of dozens of ballistic missiles. South Korea this week staged a large-scale amphibious landing drill. North Korea views such military exercises as a rehearsal for invasion. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has emphasized the need for the U.S. to show a strong commitment toward extended deterrence, the so-called nuclear umbrella. But that may not be enough, with stronger conservative voices here calling for South Korea to develop its own nuclear weapons. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Welcome to another edition of the News Review. In this edition, after more than a decade of on and off indirect talks, Lebanon and Israel have finally signed a U.S.-mediated deal to end their maritime dispute. The agreement will allow Lebanon to exploit its own natural resources. To discuss that further, we're joined, of course, by our correspondent Mariam Saleh from Beirut, also Santos Al-Assad, journalist and human rights advocate, also joining us live from Beirut. Let's begin with our correspondent. Mariam, if you could please tell us more about the significance of this deal.
Well, it's very significant in several terms. First of all, it is the first such agreement that Israel has ever signed without the other party having to be part of a normalization deal or any sort of recognition of the Israeli regime. So that on one hand gives Lebanon its rights, its full rights, actually, and this is something that Lebanon has been calling for quite a long time. The true legitimate line, if we may say the borderline, in the maritime, in the sea for Lebanon is Line 23. Now, Lebanon had been using higher levels of lines, other borders in order for it to be able to reach Line 23. The Americans and the Israelis had gone lower, much below that, and they wanted to strip Lebanon of some 860 square cubes, cubic meters. So that was something that Lebanon had refused from day one. And now with all of this negotiation, with the fact that the United States is in need of gas suppliers on one hand, and second of all, the fact that the Israelis do not want any sort of confrontation with the resistance in Lebanon because they understand the repercussions that could happen as a result of such a confrontation. So all of these factors, if you may say, and the fact that the Lebanese negotiators were quite intent, they were very much meticulous, they were very much careful that they had a good deal, that they wanted to achieve all of Lebanon's rights. They even went word for word in the agreement, making sure that Lebanon, first of all, would not be trapped in some sort or tricked into any sort of agreement that would lead to certain security guarantees for the Israeli regime on one hand, and would not strip Lebanon of any of its territory as well, because the Israelis had tried, even in the last 36 hours, tried to remove one of the areas, which is in the Ras Naqoura area, and that's a very significant strategic point for Lebanon that did not let go, so they decided to postpone that place only in order for Lebanon to get all of its rights, in addition to the full sovereignty over the Qana field, which goes beyond Line 23, and that is also very significant thing for Lebanon. It could be very beneficial and for the sake of the revenues. Now, when it comes also economically, this could open the door for Lebanon into things that has never happened in the past. Lebanon has a chance to be a petrol and gas exporter, and this is the first time in its history, and this is what that is probably the only card that could salvage Lebanon from its economic crisis, although it might take a few years, it might take some time. But Lebanon could probably start seeing the impact of this with more investments into the country, with the fact that we will probably see the Israelis backing off when it comes to launching aggressions and so on against Lebanon. So that will entail the fact that Lebanon will be open to investments and would have the possibility of becoming economically even more progressive.
Mr. Al-Assad, well, our correspondent did elaborate on how this deal is significant. I would like to No, that's Miss Al-Assad. I'm very sorry. I would like to know how you believe that this deal can be a game changer for Lebanon as far as the economy is concerned.
Yes, as you know that once again, Lebanon, this tiny state in West Asia, has been able to defeat and to crush the American hegemony and the Zionist scene. That you know that for the last 2 years, the Lebanese have been suffering from a very critical financial crisis. But the resistance has been able to prove that only the option of resistance and the option of being steadfast and having this resilience on our natural rights is the option and is the only means of maintaining these rights and maintaining the Lebanese rights. Yes, now Lebanon would be able to buy its national resources, the oil at a time, a very critical time, as we know the global crisis that all the states around the globe are facing. So Lebanon is now able to invest in this natural resources and to be able to crush, as I have mentioned, the American schemes and the sanctions that have been imposed brutally on the Lebanese and which aimed at starving them. The option of resistance and the option of the national unity that the Lebanese have shown, this unity between the resistance, the people, and the army, and between the resistance and the Lebanese diplomacy have all shown their resilience, their steadfastness, and that they don't accept any pressures by the West, and also that they are not like what's going on in the Gulf regime, who are normalizing by the Zionist regime for nothing, only for maintaining their throne. But the Lebanese have refused to show any extent of this shameful normalization. They have claimed their rights by means of resistance.
So, Mariam, tell us some more about the reaction of Hezbollah leader Sayed Hassan Nasrallah to this deal.
Well, Hezbollah Secretary General Sayed Hassan Nasrallah had a planned speech yesterday, just only minutes after the documents were signed and the deal was finalized. So he said he was not sure that he would be ready to give that speech for that sake, and he had another ceremony. So he gave very brief statements on this, and they're very significant statements, actually. He said that this is a victory for Lebanon's government, for Lebanon's people, and for the resistance, and that the resistance was on high alert in the last few months. And as you know, in his previous speeches, he stressed that the Israelis would not be able to drill or extract any gas or any petrol from the Karish field, or any other field for that matter, if Lebanon was not allowed to drill its own natural resources, and if this deal was not finalized. So that in itself was a warning. And Lebanon, we can see that now the resistance, even without a war, without a confrontation, they are able to enforce certain conditions on the Israeli regime by the fact that the resistance itself has this deterrence power. So this is what Sayed Nasrallah explained, and he said that high state of alert has ended and has been concluded, and our mission is complete. And this is probably the first history. Well, of course, we had the liberation of 2000, but that was after years of confrontations and a war of attrition enforced by the resistance. But now you did not even have an open confrontation, and Lebanon was able to enforce its conditions because the Israelis understand the repercussions of any confrontation with the Hezbollah's resistance. That is on one hand. On the other hand, he also stressed that this agreement, because it was done under the auspices of President Michel Aoun, under the auspices of Speaker Nabi Hibiri, and also Prime Minister, of course, Mikati, and very good negotiators like Deputy Speaker Elias Abu Saab, who were very much careful on the fact that this would not be a recognition of Israel, that this is not an international treaty. As Admiral Sola mentioned, you heard that in the speech. The Lebanese did not sit in the same room as the Israelis. They did not sign the same papers as the Israelis. So that is very significant for the resistance, because the resistance had always said that they are behind the government. It is the government that demarcates the borders, and Lebanon and the resistance protects those borders. So, but there is one state. For a thing of concern for Hezbollah's resistance, and they have said that this is something that we need to talk about within the parliament and so on, that what are we going to do with the funds when we do have this? We need to have transparency. We need to have a national treasury or a sovereign fund that would protect, if we may say, the revenues of these resources, and make sure that the people would really feel the results and the impact of this. And we could see the results of the fact that people are getting more electricity, for example, and the fact that Lebanon has 0 hours, if not maybe a few minutes of hours of electricity. And maybe we could see more electricity, maybe we see more services, because people pay taxes, but they see no services here in Lebanon. So you have a lot of issues that need to play out. However, there is a long battle that needs to be fought within Lebanon, because we have the issue of corruption, unfortunately, that continues. And it is even within the judicial system, which is supposed to be the side that is holding those accountable for corruption.
Thank you very much, our correspondent, Maram Saleh, from Beirut. Also, Ms. Sandus Al-Assad, journalist and human rights advocate.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith based on understanding. Saturday, the 4th of Ramadan, 1394, 21st of September, 1974. Similar to the belief of those who blindly follow is the belief of those who follow tribally, ta'assub. Some of these people are ready, may Allah protect us, to insult other prophets to please our prophet. They think that these prophets are fighting one another in the heavens. They say things like, Moses, who on earth was Moses? Our prophet is the best. Sadly, this is not something you find only amongst the uneducated. Sometimes you will see people speaking like this whom you expect better from. People who should know better. People who should understand. And you see them making these sort of mistakes. You hear them saying these sort of things. This is what we call tribalism. The ta'assub. Because Islam says this, this is right, and whatever any other religion says is nonsense. Because we Muslims do this, this is right, and because other people do that, that is wrong. I suppose this is a kind of faith, but it is not one that rests on evidence, but on tribal identity. And you know that tribalism means taking a side without any basis, taking sides based on your feelings rather than based on reason. This is what we call tribalism.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
So these are blind faith and tribal faith. But my friends, I must tell you that the kind of faith Islam values is not either of these. Blind faith and tribal belief have no value. You want proof of this? I will show you that when you believe blindly or tribally, you can lose such faith just as easily as you acquired it. Just as a child, without any effort, or a student, without any difficulty, can acquire simple faith from their parents or teachers, those who steal faith can just as easily come along and take it. And all of a sudden, you see a generation growing up without any faith. A generation whose belief has been pillaged, gone. Everyone's faith is left hollowed out and empty. In the fires of materialism, faith melts into the earth like snow in the summer heat. Who am I talking about? Normally, we talk about the younger generation like this. But I want you to know that when I talk about the generation that is losing its faith, I am not talking about the younger generation, because what we are witnessing today is the blossoming of faith in the younger generation, as it is the younger generation who are looking for a faith that is not based on blind following or tribal identity, but rather is based on understanding. No, I am talking about the generation before the youth of today, the older generation of our society, these who believe in some things blindly.
You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
People. Joe Biden halts the construction of the infamous Trump border wall when he takes office, but now the construction of the wall is being resumed. U.S. Customs and Border Protection confirmed that work on the border wall that began under Donald Trump is revving up now back under Biden. So was the halt of the wall construction just a political stunt by the Biden administration? Now back when Biden took office, he called construction a waste of taxpayers' money. So is it no longer a waste? The administration is also angering immigration advocates by staying silent on reversing Donald Trump's Remain in Mexico policy.
No crossing.
Hello and welcome to We the People. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. In this episode, we'll discuss some of Joe Biden's policies on immigration, the infamous border wall construction restart. Now, apprehending more than 2 million migrants at U.S. borders and the empty promises of the administration on the issues of immigration. Now, as usual, we're pleased to have our two guests on our show, Jamal L. Thomas, who's a co-host of Fault Lines on Radio Sputnik, and Yamir Shabur, media analyst and journalist with the Troika Collective, joining us out of New York. Stay tuned.
For the first time, the number of people arrested at the United States borders in 1 year has surpassed 2 million people. The Biden administration is trying to detach itself from immigration issues ahead of the midterm elections. Two Republican governors paid for the transfer of several released migrants to move to Massachusetts and Washington, D.C., and there were talks of sending some of the migrants to Biden's home in Delaware. With these moves, Republicans are trying to send immigrants to Democratic areas so that the Democratic ran states would deal with immigration problems like southern border states do. The current administration has sent more than 1,300 law enforcement agents to Mexico, Guatemala, and Honduras to try and stop immigrant smuggling.
At the southern border, a record number of crossings, apprehensions topping 2 million for the first time ever. That's a 175% increase from last August. Across the country, cities are overwhelmed by the influx. El Paso opening up an emergency processing facility. The mayor of New York considering cruise ships as temporary housing.
Now, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency has confirmed that the Biden administration is restarting the halted border wall construction that had begun under Donald Trump's tenure. Now, contractors will resume their operations at the Sonoran Desert in Arizona. Biden had said shortly after taking office that building a massive wall is a waste of money and that no American taxpayer dollars will be diverted to such project. So why is Biden restarting the border wall project?
The problem that Joe Biden is having is the issue of politics versus reality. The politics of it is that Donald Trump and anything Donald Trump associated with himself with, Joe Biden hate it. Very straightforward. Not just Joe Biden, the entirety of the party hate it, whether it was good or bad, whether it was even necessary. They hate it. For Donald Trump to have wed himself closer to the issue of build the wall, even being so willing to shut down the government in order to, quote unquote, build that wall. Well, if you get Joe Biden who comes in office, Joe Biden is stuck with the dilemma. I attacked Donald Trump for his border policies, and yet, on some level, I'm stuck with the same dilemma and the problems that Donald Trump had with the border. So whereas Donald Trump was more of a hardliner in the issue of the border, the Democrats, by a political definition, separated themselves from Trump on the issue of the border, which means that you can't be hawkish or hard on the border if indeed you are criticizing Donald Trump when you were out of office.
The new plans for construction will also block access to the public at Friendship Park at the San Diego border fence. According to the CBP, the fence will be replaced with 30-foot walls. Friendship Park has been the only place at the southern border where relatives from Mexico and the U.S. could see, talk, and touch each other through the fences.
This latest announcement really amounts to the complete desecration of this historic location.
John Fanasil is a longtime advocate for Friendship Park. He says replacing the existing fence with two 30-foot tall walls would destroy any sense of binational unity in this space. Friendship Park is located in the coastal borderlands near Imperial Beach and has become hallowed ground for families separated by the border. Loved ones have used this park as a gathering space where they can see and even talk to each other. But plans for the new wall do not include gates or any space for families to see each other.
Now, it's been reported before that the Trump administration's border wall had been breached more than 3,000 times and mostly by smugglers. Once smugglers reached parts of the wall where posts are placed in concrete, they saw through the bottom of the posts and leave it dangling, making room for people to squeeze through. Now, sometimes the smugglers disguise the breach so they can go through the same place again and again. What changed Biden's mind on halting the border wall project?
Joe Biden and the Democratic Party have the same type of alignment as the Republican Party. They need to defend this settler colonial state, as we know, called the United States. And in order to do that, they need to keep investing in that border. Other than that, we cannot ever forget about how Joe Biden was the vice president to Barack Obama, and the Barack Obama administration had the most deportation in history of any U.S. president. So we need to always keep these things in mind. And also, given what's going on as we speak with this immigration crisis of just all these migrants flocking from South America, Central America, Mexico, and Haiti, and right now they're at the Mexican border.
According to CBP maintenance records, most of the fence cutting has been carried out in California. In March 2021, smugglers cut through an entire section of fencing and made room for two SUVs full of migrants to drive through. One of the vehicles was involved in an accident with a truck near Hallsville, California. 13 people were killed in the incident.
Too many people basically come to the border with Joe Biden supposedly being a dove on the border. Well, you create a political issue. What do you do with that many migrants coming to the border? And can you take this softy approach when you have so many people? So Joe Biden started to rebuild the wall. There might have been various areas of that wall or that border fence that were necessary, that was not politically necessary, that was legitimately necessary. In which case, Joe Biden finds himself tail between legs, rebuilding the wall. Or for that matter, on the issue of Title 42. Title 42 was the Trump era, let's say, policy that basically was able to stop people who were coming to seek asylum into the United States. And so think about it. You have somebody who comes to the U.S., he says, I want asylum. Well, Title 42 allowed them to say, well, we're concerned about COVID, and because we're concerned about COVID, we're denying you the ability to push for asylum. Now, this is ridiculous on a few counts. During the COVID period, the immigration went down, not up. And also to the point that the United States had, what, over a million people that died from COVID? We were literally the epicenter around the globe, so it's a bit laughable that you're basically saying, well, we have to be concerned about COVID, and so we have to send you away from the country that's the epicenter.
Immigration has been an issue of conflict among American parties and their supporters. On the one hand, Biden makes promises to attract the left and progressive voters, and on the other, carries out the same Trump policies in border states. Polls show that Americans are not happy with Biden's handling of immigration.
Which the Trump administration pushed the Mexican government to do. This shows how Biden is trying to figure out a way to control this flow of migrants that are coming in. More than anything else, these immigrants coming from Venezuela, from the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela. You've had a wave of Venezuelan migrants, and now he's made a he's passed a policy where he's only allowing over 24 million Venezuelan migrants to come into the United States, but they need to show that that they have somebody here in the United States that could economically support them. It's not like before under Donald Trump, where Donald Trump allowed Venezuelan migrants to come to the border of Mexico and ask for asylum as a means to weaponize immigration against the Nicolas Maduro government in Venezuela.
And now time for some interesting stats. An NBC News poll found the issue of immigration, voters prefer Republicans over Democrats to run the policy. 46% of respondents believe that Republicans should run immigration policy versus 29% who believe that Democrats should be running it. Also, a CNN poll found that immigration is the third most pressing issue among Arizona voters.
What is going on at the border? Is that the U.S. has a history of mingling in the affairs of foreign nations, especially the South, which based on the Monroe document, all of those countries in the South were part of U.S. interests. So if we needed to knock over those governments, which we did on large part, whether you're talking about Chile, Bolivia, Honduras, etc., then we did that. We didn't think twice about it. If that meant taking those countries into all sorts of chaos and havoc, We did that. We didn't think twice about it. Because the way that we would talk about it from the American public is, oh, those countries can't get their affairs in order, when the reality of it is, was those countries had certain materials and things that we needed. We didn't want those countries moving further to the left, and we were willing to intervene in those countries if it would prevent those countries from moving to the left. That created all sorts of destabilization in those countries and all sorts of chaos in those countries. Fast forward to today, where you have all of those countries like Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua, not to mention people from other countries trying to get into the country. Well, if you look at the history of those countries, many of the history of those countries had entanglements with the U.S. More to the point on that, when Joe Biden got in office, Joe Biden basically said he'd take kids. He was going to be a softy. Well, you had a large number of people who were bringing their kids to the border and leaving their kids at the border. So the Biden administration all of a sudden had to do something to influx of kids at the border. Also, at the point where COVID started to die down, you had people who were also coming back to the U.S. with the idea of prospect for job markets and everything else, meaning you get this thing that COVID dies and all of a sudden people start looking for jobs and everything else.
On the first days after taking office, Biden stopped the border wall construction, ended the so-called Muslim ban where restrictions were placed on migrants from 13 countries, protected some illegal immigrants like Dreamers, and began ending the Remain in Mexico policy, where asylum seekers would not be able to enter or remain in the U.S. while their applications were processed.
Between Trump and Biden, Joe Biden came across as a softy, whereas the thought is that Donald Trump was the mean guy. Joe Biden, especially being in repudiation of everything that is Donald Trump, including on the issue of immigration, came across with the perspective of a softy. The U.S. doesn't necessarily have the tools or materials to deal with the influx of immigrants or migrants to the degree that it's having. So Joe Biden has run into all sorts of trouble. And Joe Biden has started to use the Trump tools, despite of him attacking Trump for using those tools, to basically try to deal with a problem that he doesn't quite have an answer to. The issue of immigration at the border is severe.
Now, close to 2 years in his term, Biden is reversing some of his immigration policies. The Supreme Court ruled late June that the government is not required to return asylum applicants to Mexico until their cases are decided. However, the administration, after being granted the authority to end the Remain in Mexico policy, has become silent, and it seems that they do not want to take action, at least not until the midterm elections.
It's very important to note that it's not just Venezuelan migrants that are coming to the Mexican border. It is also Colombians, Ecuadorians, Peruvians, Chileans, Hondurans, and massive Haitians, a lot of Haitians. I mean, as we see right now what's going on in the Republic of Haiti, of how they're having a political crisis, a political turmoil, where the United States now is militarily intervening to try to control the uprising that has happened against the prime minister, the president, the president of Haiti, which is a U.S., which he's a U.S. Canadian backed puppet. So this shows how a lot of these immigrants that are coming are due to U.S. foreign policy within the region, whether it's in Haiti, where there's a U.S. backed puppet, or in neoliberalist countries like Colombia or Ecuador or Venezuela, where the people over there are immigrating due to a U.S.-backed economic war and sanctions, these illegal unilateral coercive measures, which has affected the Venezuelan economy and the livelihood of Venezuelans, forcing them to migrate up to the north. So we have to understand that most of the people who are coming over here is due to U.S. foreign policy.
Now, on the acceptance of refugees, the administration is just using 20% of spots allocated for them. Now, in fiscal year 2022, from 125,000 available spots, only 25,000 refugees were resettled in the country. Now, this year, however, the refugee admission is more than double the number in 2021, which was a record low of just 11,411 refugees.
I don't think Joe Biden has a straightforward policy on immigration at this point. Like I said, he's started to take up the rules or the tools that Donald Trump has started to use in order to get rid of when Trump was in office to use for himself. We'll see how this progresses. But at this point, there doesn't seem to be a legitimate or, let's say, a concrete policy on the issue of immigration. Democrats don't have anything for it. Republicans certainly don't have anything for it. Both parties tend to use it for political posturing as opposed to doing anything real on the issue. That policy hasn't changed, with Biden included.
Now, Joe Biden signed an executive order last year to expand the U.S. refugee program, which was reduced significantly during the Trump administration. In fact, in 2020, Donald Trump had reduced the refugee cap down to only 15,000. Now, even though Joe Biden reversed Donald Trump's refugee policy, in practice, the number of refugees allowed in the country after that reversal is not significantly higher than the cap put in place by the Trump administration.
We're committed to fixing the immigration system. Instead of working with us on solutions, Republicans are playing politics with human beings, using them as props. What they're doing is simply wrong. It's un-American. It's reckless. And we have a process in place to manage migrants at the border. We're working to make sure it's safe and orderly and humane. Republican officials should not interfere with that process by waging these political stunts.
Also recently, Joe Biden pardoned Americans with prior federal convictions of simple marijuana possession. This order only includes U.S. citizens and green card holders. After the pardon, he announced that no one should be in jail just for using or possessing marijuana. But then, he did not include non-citizens and illegal migrants that could still be deported because of simple marijuana possession.
With Biden's policy now on marijuana, it's just very interesting about how he's now pardoning citizens who have been criminalized due to like the strong drug laws here in the United States, but yet he won't extend that gratitude to the immigrants coming over here, the non-citizens, but yet he would extend that to quote-unquote U.S. citizens.
The National Immigrant Justice Center criticized Biden's ignoring of immigrants and tweeted after the pardon that today's POTUS order grants pardons for marijuana possession convictions, but goes out of its way to exclude undocumented immigrants who may still be detained and deported because of simple possession of marijuana thanks to harsh 1996 immigration laws.
Joe Biden, the president, just continuing the mass incarceration system, which plagues the United States justice system and fuels racism and capitalism here. So this just reflects the hypocrisy of the United States. I mean, it's just like what Malcolm X once said, you know, in the United States, there's not no democracy. It's just full of hypocrisy.
Now, the U.S. government has been putting extreme pressure on the Russian government for arresting and sentencing American basketball player Brittany Griner, who entered Russia with possession of marijuana in a pen, while the president will not pardon foreign immigrants who have been charged with the same exact offense. So is this move by the U.S. government not another example of blatant hypocrisy?
Not only, it's not just that part that's hypocritical. All of it is hypocritical. The United States cried completely, oh my God, Brittany Griner is going to be locked up. This is purely political from the Russians. Here's the rub. If I was at a U.S. airport, let's say I was in Texas, and they catch marijuana on me, they're putting me in a cage. They're putting me in jail, just like they put Brittany Griner in jail. And they would prosecute me to the fullest extent of the law for having marijuana on me, just like Russia did Griner. If you want to say there's an element of politics to it, fair enough. They may very well be. But the reality of it is that in any airport in the U.S., you'd have also been arrested. Now, whether you'd have been prosecuted to 9 years, okay, that may be secondary to the point. I'm just saying you'd have been arrested and prosecuted by the laws of the land every bit as much as they were in Russia. Now, there's that. There's also the secondary thing where he's like, oh, let her out. I can't believe you guys are locking her up for this. We still have people all across the United States that are in cages right now as a direct result of marijuana policy. It's not just hypocritical from the standpoint of, well, this is also U.S. law, where we will put people in cages for that. But it's also hypocritical in the sense that we have people lounging in jail right now as a result of marijuana laws and marijuana policy. The issue that Biden came up with, saying that they were going to release, what, I think it was 6,000 people. There are 300 million people in the United States, 320 million people in the U.S. What Biden came up with only applies to D.C. And you're only getting, what, 6,000 out. And it's not even 6,000 who are in jail now. Some of those people were already out of jail. He's just expunging the records. He basically had to go out and ask for his governors to do the same in their states. The reality of it is the president of the United States ran on a policy that he was going to expunge the records for people marijuana, and he was going to change the status of marijuana so that people weren't being thrown in a cage for smoking a plant.
According to the Migration Policy Institute, there are 11 million undocumented immigrants in America. From this number, 800,000 are undocumented Latinos and 600,000 are black migrants. Patrice Lawrence, executive director of UndocuBlack, a black immigration group, says the Biden-Harris administration, like previous administrations, have treated undocumented people with little to no regard for their dignity.
DACA, just so everybody's on the same page, is Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. Now, this was the Obama-era rule put in that basically kids that were born here through no fault of their own could stay here. It was this kind of executive order. But keep in mind, executive orders aren't law in the sense of a traditional law. And the next president that comes into office can basically get rid of the executive order. Usually, Donald Trump, however, was incompetent, and Donald Trump didn't put in the legal requirements in order to get rid of the law. This goes to court. And the court basically comes back and says, okay, DACA is illegal. However, we're not going to do anything to recipients who are already here. Three-fourths of the American public at this point backs the DACA program and don't want to get kids out of the country that weren't born here through no fault of their own.
Now, whether it's Democrats or Republicans in power, the country that's taken land from the indigenous population and from its neighboring Mexico by force treats migrants coming from the South like animals. Now, Donald Trump cage and detach migrant children from their parents, and under Joe Biden, law enforcement riding on horseback attacked asylum seekers trying to cross the border. Now, the issue is not just about the party in power, but the elite white man that views people from different races as inferior. Well, that was our show, everyone. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. Do join us again next time for another episode of We the People. Bye-bye for now.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech on IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Ranjbar. Stay tuned. Hafiz, the outstanding Persian poet, in a beautiful poem states, "My eyes are like the mirrors in which only Allah is seen." This means that we humans are like the servants of Allah, and through our worshipping, we only see Him. The light of my eyes is because of the light of Allah. Also, the light of Allah is not only in my eyes. The whole universe, including the sun and the moon, benefit from the light of Allah too. The main reason for the light of moon is because it is across from the sun, and the light of sun is from Allah. This means that if Allah takes a look at someone, he will be full of light. In other words, the light of Allah is the main source for all the goodness in the world. If we want to be crystal like water, we must benefit from the light of Allah. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Ranjbar. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Midstream.
It was unprecedented and perhaps unexpected that Uday Tamimi, after targeting an Israeli female soldier, goes in hiding for 10 days and then reappears to carry out another shooting operation and be martyred as a result. This is what the Israeli occupation security and military system have never experienced before. Well, they should get used to it. It seems that the current wave of escalation in the West Bank will bring many more surprises, which the Israeli entity has so far been unable to anticipate, avoid, or thwart, let alone prevent its sequence of events. For 10 days, the Israeli security and intelligence system lived in paranoia, driven by hysteria generated by its failure to find the young fighter Uday Tamimi, who stormed the Shafat checkpoint on October 8th, attacked enemy soldiers and killed a female soldier before he withdrew in peace. While the occupying power was employing all its security, intelligence, and technological capabilities to find Tamimi and erase the traces of the slap he had directed at its army, the latter was living in disguise in the city of Al-Quds and planning his next attack with his personal pistol. The next target in mind was the settlement of Ma'ali Adumim, the pearl of the Zionist project in the holy city of Al-Quds, ripping apart the prestige of Israeli deterrence and security and squashing a system that once again seemed weaker than a spider's web. Tamimi drew in less than 2 weeks new features of the Zionist-Palestinian clash, which may mark the beginning of a new phase of resistance in the West Bank, the first of which is that the resistance guerrilla has become the one who pursues the occupation forces and pursues its illegal colonial settlers and ambushes them. Meanwhile, the same cannot be said about the Zionist entity, as Uday was able to deal a double blow to the enemy. The first is by storming a sensitive security fortress equipped with all technological and military means and withdrawing from it without scratches. The second is remaining in hiding for a long period of time and carrying out another operation in an unexpected location for the Israeli authorities who are searching for him in the Shafat camp, which shows the advanced capability of camouflage and disguise. Tamimi dispelled all the Zionist measures and succeeded in initiating a new attack, during which he fought a fierce, heroic, and unforgettable battle with the occupation forces. A battle that will leave political and security repercussions on the enemy, the first of which was the Palestinians who took to the streets in cities, villages, and camps without a decision or warning after the announcement of Tamimi's martyrdom. Since then, the entire West Bank is reliving nights of confrontation beginning in the Shafat camp in particular, reaching the city of Al-Quds, and then spreading even further. Welcome to the Middle East Stream, I'm Marwa Osman. Uday Tamimi ended 11 days of Israeli stalking in his own style. Abu Sabah, which means the brave one, as the people of Shafat camp nicknamed him when they saw him in the first video operation arriving on Wednesday night at the Ma'ali Adumim checkpoint on his feet. Uday pointed out his single pistol he fired at three occupation soldiers who were guarding the checkpoint, who then emptied their bullets at him. He jumped into the sky, trying to avoid it, then fell to the ground. He leaned on his hands and continued shooting. Bullets penetrated his body, he switched the ammo amid clash and kept shooting. Zionists drowned him with bullets. The body that had exhausted an entire army, which had been searching for him throughout 264 hours of pursuit, finally calmed down and transcended to eternal peace. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Dr. Daniel Yagic, academic and political commentator. Thanks a million for being with us, Dr. Yagic. Now, such an important scene that we all witnessed last week, but in his will, martyr Uday Tamimi, he wrote down on a torn piece of paper, my operation in Shafat was a drop in the roaring sea of struggle. Although such an effort will not liberate Palestine, the fruit of the process, according to his description, will mobilize hundreds of young people who will carry my gun and my body. This will touch the heart of every free soul in the world. But do you think, did it mean anything for Zionist Israel?
Yeah, so the martyr's act of resistance was obviously a reaction to the structural terrorism